Blog Talk Radio.
Jobs available on these farms were field work. Workers picked rocks out of the fields to prevent damaging the harvesting machines as they dug up the plants. Workers cleared the rows of stones by throwing large or mid-sized stones onto a flatbed truck. That was done in the morning. In the afternoon, the workers hoed the fields to separate the plants from the weeds. It was mindless, minimum wage, back-breaking work, but I considered myself lucky to get a job on the Julian farm because they employed mostly high school girls for summer help. And all the girls who worked at the farm that summer were friends of the farmer's daughter. The farmer's daughter, Allie, short for Allison, was a tomboy. She had shoulder-length, rust-colored hair and freckles, and when she shouted, she could be heard 100 yards away. She was only 5'3" tall, but could run as fast on a soccer field or on a basketball court, drive a truck, or work as hard as any boy her age. She was a year older than I was, and a junior in high school. All the girls who worked for her were her friends, and were juniors or seniors. I had crushes on most of them at one time or another in elementary school, and at 16, I was still infatuated with all of them. I carried their books, flirted with them in the study halls, danced with them at school dances, and dated most of them at least once. It was all kid stuff, and they never took my bumbling advances too seriously. They were all French-Canadian-American girls, who possessed a unique nature all their own. They had a mad mix of volatile emotions that could erupt at any time, anywhere, over anything. And if they liked and trusted you, they were the most fun-loving, kind, and innocent girls a boy could ever know. I knew all the girls I would be working with very well and had an idea of what to expect, but I never consciously expected what was about to happen to me or to them until I experienced those 3 weeks of working with them from my 16th summer. I had known Allie since elementary school. She warned me when she hired me for the summer that most of the crew were girls and her father expected all of them to be good workers. She told me her father didn't trust having a boy working with all girls, but he knew who I was and she convinced him I wouldn't be a problem. She told him all the girls on the crew liked me and didn't mind working with me. I was a great girl. She defended me with her father. I thanked her, and I told her I was anxious to begin work. She smiled at me the way I had seen her smile many times before, whenever she scored a goal. At 6:30 a.m. on the first day of work, Allie's father met the crew at the farmhouse. She told us Allie would be our boss. Allie also had her father hire a younger brother of one of the girls, John. Was 15. I knew him and his older sister, Anne, for many years. John had an odd sense of humor that became a problem for him later. Allie's father looked at both John and I sternly and said, "I don't want you getting silly when around these girls. I told Allie if you boys get out of hand, she has to tell me and I'll have you shoveling manure for the next 3 weeks. If you'd rather quit, that's fine with me." John and I nodded to him, assuring him we understood his warning. The girls were all quiet. Anne looked at her brother John and said, "Don't do anything stupid." He made no reply. Anne had recently highlighted her hair with blonde streaks and looked very attractive. We had been friends for several years, and I often carried her books and walked her home after school, and she shared my conversations. I had asked her several times if she would go out on a date with me, but she always refused. She said she felt that I was too young for her, but she liked me and enjoyed our friendship. I accepted her answer with obvious disappointment, but she was careful not to crush my ego and allowed me to retain hope of a date with her and a future possibility. She graduated that summer, and she hadn't accepted a date with me yet. There was always a comfortable tension and attraction between us, but the tension was greatly relaxed by the end of the summer. Allison was to drive us all to the field in the flatbed truck. There were 10 of us in all. I was the first to jump up on the on the back of the flatbed truck. I offered my hand to each of them to pull them up, and as I pulled several girls up to the back of the truck, each girl had to kneel on the edge of the flatbed to get on. Girls were all wearing shorts or cutoffs, and several skinned their knees as they got up. I recommended a way for them to avoid this problem and asked the girls who hadn't climbed on yet to help to let me grab both of their hands to pull them up. They agreed that it might be a better way. It was. I pulled them onto the truck holding both of their hands until they caught their balance and climbed onto the flatbed. While Ellie drove the truck through the field, the girls all held on to the side rails of the flatbed, and John and I sat down between the two rows of standing girls, with our backs leaning against the truck's cab. John couldn't hold back his first joke and said something about admiring eight pairs of legs, girls' legs and cut-off shorts. His sister Ann was standing near us and heard the comment. She slapped him on the top of his head and said, "Do you want to shovel manure the rest of this day?" John didn't say another word until he arrived at the field. Once we arrived, we all jumped off the truck, and Allie shouted her first orders. She assigned six girls to begin weeding the field and ordered John and I to pick rocks. Then she asked for two girls willing to join to work with us. Jennifer and Marjorie volunteered. Jennifer was an athletic brunette with bright eyes and a perfect smile. She was tall, slim, and talkative. She was 2 years older than I was and played basketball with Allison on the girls' varsity team. She was a good dancer, and I would often ask her to dance with me at the school dances. She told me she enjoyed dancing with me because I was one of the only boys in school taller than she was. Marjorie was a very pretty girl. She was studious and thoughtful. She wore glasses, and she told everyone she could see without them, but I always thought she was hiding behind them. She was very popular, yet seldom dated, but she was often asked. She had light brown shoulder-length hair and was always modestly dressed. I remember her hair seemed golden in the morning sunlight. Marjorie was calm and sincere and was able to calm most arguments between her friends without taking sides. Although she was attractive, she was never vain. She worked alongside me quietly as we picked up mid-sized stones and threw them in the back of the flatbed truck. She would attempt to pick up bigger rocks without asking me to help her until I scolded her and told her to pick up only the rocks she could handle or she would hurt herself. She argued with me, stating she wasn't going to hurt herself, and thanked me for offering to help her. We worked quietly together, picking up the stones from between the rows of beets. To break the silent tension, I asked her if she had a favorite book or movie, and our conversation continued from there on many topics. Morning passed quickly. It was almost noon when Marjorie asked me what I had brought for lunch. She said she had bought too much and asked me if I wanted to share hers. I had only my Boy Scout canteen tied around my belt and offered her some water. She accepted and said what a good idea it was to carry a canteen. She had her water in a thermos in the cab of the truck, but didn't want to make Allie stop the truck so she could get a drink. We had 2 10-minute breaks that entire morning. After Marjorie drank from the canteen, she pulled out a handkerchief from her hip pocket and wiped her forehead. Then she took off her glasses to clean them. I told her she was very pretty without glasses, and she quickly put them back on, ignoring my remark. I remained silent for several minutes, picking up rocks until she started the conversation again. At noontime, Allie drove us all to the field where the other girls were working, so everyone could have lunch together. We sat on a patch of ankle-deep grass at the side of the planted field. Anne and Andrea sat on my left, and Marjorie and Monique on my right. Gail and Louise, the Bendel sisters, sat opposite us, and Allie sat next to Susan and Jennifer. I was warmly welcomed in the circle with smiles and warm hellos. John had a few words with his sister Anne and decided to stay clear of her and eat by himself near the truck. As we all sat down and opened our lunch bags, Marjorie offered me an apple and half of her sandwich. Ann and Andrea asked if I would work in the field with them that afternoon. Andrea was a radiant beauty with long black hair tied in a single braid. Her legs were long and tan, and her eyes were dark brown. She and Ann had just graduated in June and were best friends. Ann asked Andrea if she would help her tie her hair into a braid. The Pendle sisters were laughing as they squirted each other while peeling oranges. And they were both brunette with striking features. Her eyes either sparkled with joy or threw darts of anger. Gail had shoulder-length hair tied back in a ponytail, and Louise wore her hair short in a geisha cut and had a pearl-colored barrette holding her bangs above her forehead. They always enjoyed themselves at a party. I drove them home one night several weeks earlier after a party where they both got a little busy. Monique was the envy of every girl in the county. She had won several state beauty pageants. She had a great sense of humor and could tell a phony come on a mile away. I taught her most of them. I had bought a paperback book when I was 14. From a local drugstore entitled 50 Guaranteed Come-On Lines and tried them all on her over the course of several months until one of them piqued her interest. Every time I met her in a school or she was walking home or into town, I would tell her a new one, and she would laugh and let me walk with her, and on occasion let me buy her a Coke and sit with her at Buddy's, the local after-school hangout. Monique once invited me to a party at her house when her parents were away. I was the youngest guy there by at least 3 years. She saved me from getting beat up by every guy at the party that night. They thought I crashed the party. I was very uneasy walking up to her front door that night as I saw 10 cars parked on the street and in the driveway, all owned by seniors. I knocked loudly on the front door. I could hear Hendrick's Foxy Lady playing as I walked up the driveway. Monique answered the door and smiled surprisingly, then welcomed me in. As I entered, she began to laugh and said she didn't think I would come. As I entered the kitchen, every guy in the room rushed to the door and began to question me for being there, including her older brother. They all knew I was a freshman in high school, but I was bigger than most of them at 6 feet tall and 170 pounds. Monique told them she had invited me, and they all backed off. Monique's extraordinary beauty was disarming and natural, and she was amazingly beautiful regardless if field dust were smudged on her face. She and Marjorie were close friends. Allie, Susan, and Jennifer were laying next to each other on the grass as Jennifer was talking about her troubles with her new boyfriend. Susan was 18 and had just graduated. She was blonde, tall, and athletic, and had light green eyes. Susan and I were friends, and we often danced with each other at school dances. She introduced me to one of her out-of-town friends one night when I met her. I met them in the lobby of a movie theater in our town. The new James Bond movie I wanted to see was playing that night. And after we bought our refreshments, the girl asked if I would like to sit with them, and I agreed. Her friend was 18. Susan didn't tell her my age. I later dated her friend twice until Susan told her how old I was. Susan told me she was afraid her friend was getting serious about me. I never heard from her friend again, but I thanked Susan for telling her. And as I sat on the grass in the middle of the circle of girls, quietly admiring each of them, Monique and Marjorie were sitting next to me, suddenly stood up, and said they were going to the stream across the field to wade in the water to cool off, and asked me if I wanted to join them. The Pendle sisters asked if they could go, and Ann and Andrea said they wanted to go as well. And Allie told them that lunch ended in 30 minutes and to be back at the truck by then. Audrey and Monique were instigators of the idea, and I was their grateful guest. I wondered if the other girls might have been suspicious of Marjorie and Monique for asking me to join them. But what did I know? Those two could have asked me to stand on my head for 5 minutes, and I would have tried it. I was so high on being with them, with all of them, being able to enjoy their company, that I would have followed them anywhere without question. I followed the girls as they all chattered about one thing or another. I wasn't listening to anything one was saying. I was just walking along behind them all, enjoying the beautiful scenery. And as we got to the stream, it was slightly hidden below a ridge of trees and a few large embedded rocks. The big rocks had thick green moss nearly near the water's edge. Girls took off their sneakers before they waded in the stream, and the stream was running gently downhill and had a noticeable current. Marjorie was the first in the water. She staggered backwards slightly as she got her footing and leaned over to scoop the water up in her hands to wash her legs. Monique followed her into the stream and did the same thing, except she also washed her face in the clear spring water. I had told her earlier that she had a few smudges of fuel dust on her face, and I offered her my clean handkerchief. She thanked me, but told me she would wash it off later. That was the way she was. She was so unaffected by her own remarkable beauty that she didn't bother to wipe the smudge off her face. The other girls had dirt on their hands and nails, even though they wore gloves while weeding and picking up stones. And they all wore sneakers and a few more socks. I was wearing work shoes and socks and a pair of work jeans. I had dirt on my shoes and dust in my hair, but I didn't want to take off my shoes and I didn't want to get my pants wet. I knelt down beside the stream bed and scooped up some water to wash my face and hands. The water was cool and clear. I resisted drinking it because the girls had already stepped into the stream and stirred it up, and I was downstream from them. I cupped the water in my hands, washed my face, and slicked back my hair. Within a minute, all the girls had taken off their sneakers and began to wade in the stream. John, who had stayed near the truck, finally decided the parade was too irresistible to pass up. As I sat on a large rock by the stream watching the girls, John snuck up behind me. He motioned to me to be quiet as he began to secretly pick up the girls' sneakers to hide them. None of the girls noticed him as they waded in the stream. I decided not to say anything and let John do his mischief. When he had picked up all the sneakers, he quickly ran behind the trees to the top of the ridge and hid them. I acted like I hadn't noticed and where he went. And after a short while had passed, Allie waded out of the stream and told everyone it was nearly time to get back to work. She began to look for her sneakers but couldn't find them. She turned to me and asked if I had seen the sneakers and pointed to where they had left them. I told her I didn't see them and asked her if she took them off further downstream. Allie looked puzzled and walked further downstream, then turned around and said, "Someone took our sneakers." Then she noticed John on the ridge grinning from ear to ear. She yelled at him, saying, "Did you take our sneakers? You better not have taken them, or I'll have you shoveling shit for the rest of the day." As the other girls came out of the water and began to look for their sneakers, John started to laugh and shouted to them from the ridge, telling them he had their sneakers. His sister Ann became furious at him and threatened that she would tell her parents what he did when she got home. John didn't heed the threat and began to laugh at her and said he was going to bring everybody else's sneakers back down but hers. She would have to walk up the ridge to get hers. All nine girls began to yell at him as if he had unleashed an attack of nine angry harpies. His little joke turned sour as he threw the sneakers down from the ridge and ran back toward the field. As the girls sorted out their sneakers and put them on, Allie and Ann decided to go after John. John didn't give Ann her sneakers, and she began to walk over to the rough terrain, barefooted, to get to the ridge. I was still sitting on the large rock next to the stream, watching this all unfold. I got up and went over to where Ann was struggling to walk in her bare feet. I told her to wait where she was and I'd get her sneakers. She thanked me and cursed her brother. It appeared to her tone by her tone that it might be poor John's first and last day of work. Allie was in no mood for mercy, and she struggled to find her sneakers in the pile of eight pairs. And I got to the top of the ridge. I saw John running across the field. I hoped he would get to safety before the girls got him. I found Ann's sneakers where John had left them and brought them back to her. By then, all the girls had sorted out the pile of sneakers and were complaining about John's prank. They looked at him as if I might have had something to do with it. And Jennifer looked at me inquisitively and then smiled her perfect grin and said, "Nah, he didn't do it. John did it all by himself." Jennifer had worked with John all morning and was already angry with him for doing something he did. I was not told the details of what happened between them, but it was just one more reason for John to be sent to the manure pile. All the girls began to laugh and agree with Jennifer as she insisted to Allie that John be sent back to the barn, where her father told her to send him if he got out of hand and John would have to shovel manure for the rest of the day. Allie confided with Ann, and they both agreed it would be a good lesson if Allie sent him to the barn to shovel manure. As we all walked back across the field to the truck, John had already decided he wasn't going to spend the remainder of the day shoveling manure. As we all crossed the field, John watched us and began to laugh when Ann yelled at him. He started to giggle at her as we watched her turn red with anger. Allie told him to stop laughing and that she was going to send him to the barn, and if he didn't want to go, then she would have to fire him. John laughed. As John stopped laughing, as Allie and Ann approached him and began to apologize, and he began to apologize to Allie and promised he wouldn't do anything else and that he would work hard the rest of the day. Allie looked at Ann and asked her what she wanted to do. Ann was still furious with him, but she said that if he screwed up one more time, she wanted Allie to fire him. She said she wasn't going to babysit him anymore. Allie agreed and then told everyone to get on the truck and that she was taking us all to another field to weed for the rest of the afternoon. Jennifer contested their decision and said said he should be sent to the barn. John quickly apologized to her for taking her sneakers and told her he wouldn't bother anyone the rest of the day. Jennifer told Allie he didn't want to work near him. She didn't want to work near him, and Allie agreed that he wouldn't. The crisis was ended temporarily, but no one except myself had any pity for John. I just hoped for his sake he kept his promise, or Ann and Allie would show no mercy to him if he didn't. One of the farm crew had taken the flatbed we had filled with rocks that morning and replaced it with an empty one. Meanwhile, we were at lunch. I jumped onto the flatbed, and John joined me as we both helped the girls climb up. I was glad to see John was beginning to learn how to get along with the girls. He told me later, as we were working in the field, that he was trying to learn from me. I laughed and told him I was just lucky they got mad at him and not me. And I thanked him for taking all the blame for the sneaker theft. He said he was sorry for getting me into it and thanked me for playing along with him. I warned him not to do anything else to get them angry. He smiled a silly grin and said he always teased his sister, but this time she got really angry with him. He said he didn't really want the job. His parents wanted him to take it to keep him out of trouble. We arrived at the new field shortly after 1 o'clock, but then the sun was shining bright and hot overhead, and the temperature had climbed into the 80s. I was wearing a long sleeve shirt, a work shirt, and t-shirt underneath. I took off my shirt and tied it around my waist. I got sunburned easily and wanted to avoid a bad sunburn. I wore a bandana to cover my head and had a pair of sunglasses. I had made it to the level of a Star Scout when I was 14 and learned a few survival techniques, but I quit the Scouts that same year I discovered girls. I had gotten sunstroke several times and didn't want to repeat that misery. The girls were all getting sunburned. I could see the redness on their arms and necks and on the back of their legs as they worked in the field. None of them seemed to worry about it, but as I was working next to Monique, I asked her if she had put on any sunscreen. She said she had bought some, but hadn't put it on yet. I told her she should because her arms are getting burned. She was wearing a light blue sleeveless blouse and a pair of faded jean cutoffs. I told her she had better put on some sunscreen or she would burn. She quickly put down her hoe and went over to the truck to get her handbag and reached inside and pulled out her sunscreen. Suddenly, all the girls put down their hose and went over to the truck. Jennifer asked Monique if she could use some of the sunscreen, saying to Monique that she had forgot to bring hers, and she would bring hers the next day and let Monique use it. Marjorie had brought a tube of sunscreen, and did Ann and Susan. They shared it with each other. I couldn't stand the perfume smell and rarely used sunscreen. The girls were used to tanning lotion. Some of them had brought some and began to apply it to their legs and arms. When Allie saw anyone going toward the truck and putting on sun lotion, she told everyone to take a 10-minute break. Allie was wearing a baseball cap and a short-sleeve shirt and had on a pair of cut-off jeans that went just above her knees. She told the girls that she had put on sunscreen earlier that morning. Gail and Louise started to argue with each other over who forgot to bring the sun lotion. Gail insisted Louise was supposed to bring it, and Louise insisted that she told her to bring it. Neither had any, and Marjorie broke up the argument and let them use hers. Susan and Jennifer were drinking water and leaning against the truck as Jennifer poured some of the water over her neck and let it run down her back. Susan put some water in hand and washed her neck and shoulders under her short sleeve blouse. It was nearly 2 o'clock, and the sun was bright and at its hottest. That summer broke temperature records for the state of Maine. After the break, we all went back to work. As the temperature began to rise, so did the tempers. Louise suddenly dropped her hoe and started to shout as a field mouse ran in front of her. "Oh, oh," she kept saying as she picked up her hoe and started to strike at the mouse and chasing it away from her. Then Jennifer began to scream as the mouse crossed in front of her. Everyone ran over to see what had happened when Louise suddenly calmed down enough to say a mouse with a long tail ran over her foot and she felt the tail on her ankle. Then Jennifer started to scream again and hitting the ground with her hoe, saying, "There were two big mice running around here. I began to laugh as Jennifer started to jump around while striking at the mice. She saw me laughing. She got angry with me and said, "What are you laughing at? These mice are as big as rats." I told her they were rats and not to let them bite her. She then dropped her hoe and started running toward the other girls. All the girls began to run toward the truck for fear of being bitten by large rats. John quickly ran over to where Jennifer had been standing and saw several mice running through the rows. He was able to catch one by its tail and held it up to show the girls how small it was. Jennifer and I had convinced them the mice were rats, and they all started to scream. John kept holding the mouse by the tail until I walked over to him and looked at the mouse. It was a regular-sized field mouse, though it did have a long tail, and Louise had disturbed their nest, and they were as scared of her as she was of them. And Jennifer, who was working a few rows over from Louise, got the worst of it as the several mice ran in front of her. I told John to put down the mouse and went over to the truck. Jennifer was still angry with me for laughing at her and said, "You said they were rats. Are they rats?" I laughed and said, "Yes, but little rats. Not like the big rats that I've seen before." Allie didn't believe me and said, "They were just field mice. I've seen plenty of them. They don't hurt anybody. You're just making it up to scare us." I looked at her and said, "No, they are field rats too. But these were field mice, and you're right. They can't hurt anyone." With those words, the girls relaxed, and Allie told everyone to go back to work. Louise and Jennifer said they wanted to change roles and not work near the mice. John and I offered to trade places with them, and everyone continued working for another half hour until Andrea and Anne began to scream and strike their hoes on the ground in front of them. Anne shouted out, "Snake, snake, a huge snake!" She and Andrea tried to kill it as they beat the ground with her hoes. We all stopped and went over to help them. Anne was nearly hysterical, and Andrea was standing behind her, frightened and screaming at Anne to kill the snake. Anne and Andrea had been tilling the rows near the edge of the field near high grass. They had come across upon a large garter snake sunning itself between two of the rows on the beets, and by the time we got to where they were, the snake had fled into the high grass, and John went into the grass to look for it, but couldn't find it. Andrew was standing behind Anne, holding Anne's shoulders, jumping up and down with fright. Her eyes were open wide as she cried with fear. Anne had slightly calmed down herself and told Andrea the snake was gone. Andrea was still so frightened that Allie had her go over to the truck and sit down. Susan went over to her to help calm her down, and the other girls huddled around Anne. I asked Anne if she had hit the snake or hurt it. She told me that she had hit it once, but was afraid it would strike back at her, and she kept hitting the ground next to it to scare it away. I told her that garter snakes weren't poisonous and don't bite people. She said it was a big black snake, and I replied that it might have been a biter, and it was a good thing that she didn't strike at her. She looked at me straight in the eyes to see if I was lying to her or making fun of her. I convinced her I wasn't making fun of her or lying, but only telling her that it could be that she made the right decision to scare it away. She trusted my answer enough to stop staring at me so directly. I told her Andrea seemed very shaken up. Anne replied, saying that Andrea had a real fear of snakes when she was younger, and they still scared her, and that the snake was big. And she then turned without saying anything else and went to the truck to see if Andrea was all right. It was a little after 2 o'clock before everyone had settled down. Work ended at 3:30, and we had to drive back to the farmhouse. All of us were tired and hot and anxious to finish work. Several of the girls were taking it easy when Allie's father drove up to the field to check on our progress. Allie went over to see him as he got out of his pickup truck. He seemed happy that we had nearly finished with the field and gave John and I a stern look when we stopped working for a minute. I was thirsty and took a drink from my canteen, and John was wiping his forehead with his handkerchief. It was over 80 degrees that afternoon, with a little breeze. Allie's father got back in his pickup, and without saying anything to anyone, and drove away. Allie shouted out to everyone that we had to finish the field in the next hour. She walked over to Gail and Louise, who had gotten behind, and then came over to John and I. John and I were nearly finished our sections and were near the end of the field. Allie told us to finish quickly and help out Gail and Louise. We finished our sections and walked over to them. They had stopped working and watched us as we walked toward them. Then Louise said loudly, "It's about time you guys came to help us. You two are just too slow." John was about to say something in response, but stayed quiet. He was on probation and couldn't afford to say anything that would set the girls off. When he approached Gail and Louise, we realized how far behind they had gotten. I looked at both of them sternly and asked them what they had been doing all afternoon. I was ready for the Pendle temper to flare, but they surprised me with their answer by saying they were tired and hot and didn't want to work anymore. They said they had had enough and didn't want to do any more, and didn't care what Allie said to them. I was surprised at their frankness and replied, "So you were waiting for us to bail you out?" Gail smiled slyly and said, "You guys work twice as fast as we can, and it's not fair that we got such a big section to do." Their section of the field was no larger than anyone else's, but I wasn't going to argue the point. John was about to say something, but I quickly stopped him and told him to take a row to work in, and I'd bet him a dollar that I could finish before he could. And he took Gail's section, and I took Louise's section, and he accepted my challenge, and we began to work. John began to work faster than he did all day. We ignored the sisters and began to race each other to the finish line. It was the most fun we had all day. Within half an hour, we had finished the section. John declared himself the winner, but Gail and Louise disagreed. Gail said John had finished first, and Louise said he didn't hoe all the weeds. And John was determined to get the dollar I had bet him, but I wasn't about to concede. I looked back at his rows and told him he had missed half of the weeds. He got mad and said he didn't. Allie heard us arguing as we stopped working. She came over to us to see what we were doing. I could tell she was surprised that we had finished the entire section early. I asked if she would be the judge of who won the race. I told her I had bet John a dollar I could finish before he did. I knew he was still upset with John from his earlier prank, and she might rule in my favor. She agreed to pick the winner and walk through the rows to see if they were all weeded. John had skipped many patches of weeds as he tried to win the race, and I had left a few patches as well. As she walked back toward us, she said, John hadn't finished, and I had left a few patches also. I asked her if she would judge the winner if we went back and did the areas we missed. She agreed. John immediately ran back to the section he missed, and I looked at my patches I had missed. I had missed only a few patches of weeds and quickly tilled them before John finished. John pretended he was done at the same time, and I was, until Allie inspected his rows. She ruled that I had won and told John to finish up. John didn't have the dollar to pay off the bet, but promised to pay me on payday. I told him I'd accept a quarter that day, because I was certain he would be fired before payday. He reached into his pocket and pulled out a quarter and threw it to me, saying it was all he had. I laughed and accepted the quarter as full payment. The field was nearly finished, and Allie asked Gail, Louise, and myself to help the other girls. They only had 30 minutes left to finish the field. We finished the field on time and headed for the truck, put our tools and ourselves into the flatbed and drove back to the farmhouse. Everyone drove to work that first day with their own transportation. Susan, Andrea, and Ann had cars and picked up the other girls. And the Pendle sisters drove to work together. My father drove me to work that morning, and I told him I would get a ride home with someone after work. I asked the girls if there was room for me in one of their cars, and Gail and Louise offered me a ride. As we all got off the back of the truck, Allie announced that she would pick us up in the morning, drop us off after work, if we could meet her at the A&P parking lot in town. Most of us agreed to the arrangement, and Allie told us she would pick us up at 6:30 the next morning and not to be late. We all lived in the same town, and the A&P parking lot was a 15-minute walk from my house. As I got into the back seat of their car, Gail and Louise began to argue about who would drive home. Both had their driver's license, and both insisted they were a better driver than the other. I offered to flip a coin to see who would drive. Louise said she was the oldest, and their parents trusted her to drive the car, and Gail wasn't a good driver. Gail insisted she was a good driver and asked me to flip a coin. Gail continued to argue with Louise until she finally agreed to flip a coin. I took a quarter out of my pocket and asked them to choose heads or tails. They both chose heads. I said Louise would be heads and Gail would be tails. I flipped the coin in front of them and didn't call the results. Instead, I showed them the coin the way it landed. It was heads. Gail said I cheated, but conceded to her sister. As they drove me home, they asked me if I was going to meet Allie the next morning. I said yes, and they told me they were too because their mother needed the car the next day. said all the girls were going to ride with Allie. I asked both of them if they were going to quit their jobs because they seemed like they wanted to quit earlier that afternoon. They both said they were just too hot and tired to work anymore. They had worked hard enough that day. They also said that they needed to work the summer to make money. Louisa just graduated and was going to school in the fall. And Gail wanted to buy new clothes. And they both said they enjoyed working with Allie and the rest of the girls and that it was good exercise. That was why the girls didn't mind working on Allie's farm. All the girls were working that summer because they needed the money and there weren't any other jobs to be had. I said I needed the job too and was grateful to get it. When we arrived at my house, I thanked them for the ride and said I'd see them the next day. As they drove away, Louise beeped the horn and both waved goodbye. I went into the house and took off my boots on the front porch. It was only 4:30 in the afternoon. I was tired and hungry and needed a shower. I cleaned up, ate supper, my family and went to bed early and slept soundly until 5 a.m. the next morning. I must have had enough sleep that night because I survived the fury of the following day, which was one of the most intense trials of my own patience I had ever experienced. As my mind wanders randomly through different memories of different ages of my life, the summer of working on the Julian farm stands out so clearly that I can almost live again with those memories. As I attempt to write this memoir of a time so clearly focused on in my mind, I can see and feel and almost touch everything that I was experiencing at the exact time the experience took place. It's uncanny how I remember the way I can see the faces of these young and beautiful women, all 17 and 18 years old. I was 16 at the time. I was self-confident. I didn't feel the need to impress anyone then. I only needed to wake up in the morning, experience the day as fully as I could, and go to bed at night. It was a time when pressures of daily adult living and heavy baggage of adult life was unknown to me. This is not pure fantasy, but pure reality. I am blessed again and again as I recollect each moment of my intense existence in the presence of overwhelming feminine beauty and feminine wiles. On the second day of work, I woke up at 5 a.m., cleaned up, dressed into my work clothes, and went downstairs to eat breakfast and prepare my lunch for the day. I was planning to walk to the parking lot that morning to meet Allie, the rest of the girls. It was cool that morning, but it would soon be another hot day by noon. I put on a sweatshirt over my work shirt. I sunburned my arms and neck a little in the field the previous afternoon, decided I would keep my long sleeve shirt on with a collar during the day to keep the sun off my neck and roll up the sleeves if it got too hot. I was preparing for work and thinking ahead. What I wasn't thinking of, and I should have been, was the girls. By the end of the second day of work, they compelled me to think of each and every one of them as complex individuals and remarkable creations. Every morning of my young life, I would wake up with a good sense of my own self, with an idea of what I would do each day. But during my 16th summer, when I worked in the fields on the Julian farm, by noontime each day, I would transcend into another space and time. It was like an out-of-body experience. I looked forward to lunchtime and my transcendence into my altered reality. I realized by the end of the first week that it was what it was that set me for a loop every day. I had been denying my sexual attention as I worked around these young women. I was very familiar with all of them. Many of them I had known since junior high school and had dated or had long conversations with or cheered for them in a sports event or danced with them at parties or school events. I knew them all as well as a 16-year-old boy could. I tried to ignore the tensions between us and focused on work to keep my mind occupied. I created 3 new songs that week and wrote them all down each night after work with lyrics and melodies. Some were harmonica tunes that I had wailed so loud I had to play them in the garage. I successfully distracted myself for a while, but I gave up trying anymore by the second week and decided not to fight it, because there was no reason to resist the casual, sensual atmosphere that became the natural state between the girls and myself as we worked together in the fields. Before the summer was over, there were few mysteries left between the girls and I. Instead of a tense or sexually explosive atmosphere, we created one of trust and friendship and sensuality. It transformed our days of hard work into days of fun, laughter, and appreciation of each other. By the end of that summer, I felt I had been initiated into a unique club few heterosexual males at the age of 16 even knew existed. On the morning of the second day, I walked to the A&P parking lot to meet Allie in the truck. It was a little past 6 a.m., and I had enough time to walk casually. I always carried a small spiral notepad and a pencil or a pen to write down song lyrics or stanzas of lines to a poem. I stopped walking as I took out my pad for my pocket to write down a few lines to the poem that I had eventually finished that week. I didn't want to forget the words as the day went on. As I pulled my notepad from my hip pocket, I looked upwards at a large white cloud moving ahead. The sky was clear blue and the sun had just risen. I began to write these lines. She walks toward the center of the earth as I enter the day whole to myself. And as I continued my walk to the parking lot, I turned the corner of my street which led into Main Street. I saw Allie driving a flatbed truck and heard it banging and rattling as it passed by. I didn't think she had seen me, or she might have stopped. I was still 5 minutes away from the parking lot where everyone was to meet her. As I continued walking, the song came back into my head. I was grateful that I had the song so well memorized by then. It would be my key distraction to ignore most of what would be going on around me once I started work. The first shot to my head happened as soon as I arrived at the parking lot. Allie was sitting by herself in the truck going over the day's work schedule her father had given her. As I walked over to the truck, she waved to me. No one else had arrived yet. Allie got out of the truck and walked and waited for me to approach her. She had a big smile on her face and said, "You're the first one." I told her she drove past me as I came onto the main street and asked her if she had seen me. She said she did, but she didn't want to stop the truck in the middle of Main Street to pick me up, and that I was almost near the parking lot anyway. I was a quarter of a mile away from the parking lot when I saw her pass by, and there were no cars parked in the street or following her. Main Street in our town was always deserted at that time in the morning. As I approached Allie, she told me her father wanted everyone to only work weeding the fields that day. And she had to split up the crew to try to finish two fields. She said that I would be with John and four other girls in one field and the rest would be working in another field. She said she told her father that John and I worked well together and he wanted both of us to start work in the bigger field. I asked her who else would be working with us, and she replied she wasn't sure. She wanted to ask the girls which ones wanted to work with us. I told her that I didn't mind working with any of them, but that Gail and Louise might be better off staying in the smaller field. And she agreed with me and said she was thinking of Monique, Anne, Andrea, and Marjorie. I didn't respond for a minute, a few seconds, as I paused and thought of the lineup. I then asked her if Andrea was okay from her snake scare. Allie laughed and said she had called her later the night before and asked if she was still planning to come to work, and Andrea said she would be. I was pleased with Allie's selection and felt that she was rewarding me until she said she would have to ask the girls first if they wanted to work with John and me. Well, John would be the thorn in my laurel wreath, for I didn't get my hopes up. So I really didn't get my hopes up. As I was thinking about the work arrangement, Gail and Louise drove into the parking lot, driven by their mother. Then John and Anne drove up, driven by their father. And John was in the front seat, and Andrea and Anne were in the back seat, and Monique, Marjorie, Susan, and Jennifer lived a few blocks away from each other and within walking distance from the parking lot. They had all walked to work together that morning and were crossing the street. I thought it was interesting how everyone had arrived at the same time. I later realized it was this synchronicity amongst the girls that made the entire experience of working with all of them a far greater challenge to my singular synchronicity. By the end of the first week of work, I had identified the rules of the game. As I watched everyone walking toward the truck, I sensed a different attitude from the day before. They all seemed more talkative, friendly, and cheerful. I was still standing with Ali as the others came toward us, and everyone said hello or good morning to us. Ali didn't mention anything to them about the work assignment and told everyone to get on the truck. All the girls were wearing long pants, but had brought shorts or cutoffs to change into if it got too hot. I noticed most of them were wearing socks, their sneakers, and were better dressed for working in the fields than they were the day before. I didn't suspect the significance of their extra bags until later that day. I jumped into the backs of the truck and the back of the truck and asked if anyone wanted to hang up, or anybody wanted to hand up. Gail and Louise accepted, as did Jennifer and Susan. And Marjorie and Monique were wearing long pants, and Marjorie climbed onto the tailgate herself and helped Monique up, as I helped Anne and Andrea. John asked his jovial, wasn't his jovial self that morning. He seemed reluctant to help anyone. He jumped up on the flatbed and watched as everyone got on. Having everyone ride on an open flatbed on main roads, he may be illegal in the 21st century, but at the time it was an accepted method of transportation for farm crews. Everyone held on to the waist-high rails or sat down. It was a fun way to ride to work, though the temperature was nearing 60 and was still cold as the air in the morning mist rushed against our faces. Most of the girls had brought sun hats to wear to work that day, and several girls had put them on as we drove to the fields. The farm was 5 miles away from town along Route 1. Ellie had been driving farm equipment and trucks since she was 10 years old and got her agricultural license at 14. She was 17 and drove well enough that her father trusted her to pick up the entire crew. When we arrived at the farm, Ellie drove straight to the fields on the bumpy dirt road that knocked us around as we held onto the rails or tried to sit. Jennifer was first to yell out to Ellie to slow down on the dirt road after she nearly lost her balance when she went over a pothole. She and Susan remained standing up, leaning against the cab of the truck as everyone else had sat down and tried to held onto the rails. When we turned around onto the road, I was surprised at how quiet the girls were that morning. As we turned onto the dirt road, they all stopped talking at once and became serious. I sensed none of them were looking forward to another day of work in the fields. John had remained quiet throughout the ride to the farm. Anne wasn't overly talkative either. Andrea seemed herself as she and Anne sat next to each other holding onto the rail. Andrea was smiling and seemed to be in another world as the wind blew her bangs across her face. She had her hair tied in a ponytail with a yellow ribbon instead of a tied in a braid the way she wore the day before. She brought a straw sun hat with her and held it in her lap so it wouldn't blow away. And Anne had bought a white cloth sun hat. Her hair was tied into a ponytail with a light green homemade ribbon with frayed edges. Field fashions became very creative as the summer progressed, and I began to look forward to seeing what the girls would wear each day. When we reached the field, the work fields, Ali stopped the truck and told everyone to get off and get our hoes. I feel the need to give the definition of hoe for those unfamiliar with farm tools. In the 21st century, the word hoe is often used as a derogatory name referring to women. But please note that I am making no subtle or intentional use of this meaning in this story. A hoe is used to weed fields or gardens. A hoe has a long wooden handle similar to a shovel and a sharp, flat metal hook-shaped cutting edge to break up the ground, and are used to separate plants from weed or prepare the ground for planting. As we got our tools, Allie took out her clipboard and said she had to finish 2 fields that day. Everyone was going to work in the field and no one would be picking rocks. Without any asking them, Allie said she wanted Monique, Marjorie, Anne, and Andrea to work with John and me in the larger field. Then the rest of the girls would stay in the small field and join us for lunch. To my surprise, no one complained with their assignment. Anne went over to Allie and said something to her in private as Allie nodded her head in agreement. And John came over to me and said he didn't want to work with his sister, but had to. He had caught hell from his parents the night before when Anne told them about his sneaker prank. I told him if he had stayed out of trouble for a few days, everything would blow over. Then we put our hose in the truck and jumped on the flatbed as the 4 girls got on with us, and Allie drove us to the next field. The rest of the morning went smoothly as the 6 of us worked well together. John remained quiet and stayed away from his sister as he and I worked together. He and I managed to accomplish a lot that morning and had nearly reached the end of our assigned sections by lunchtime. The 4 girls working in the field with us were much further behind. The temperature had climbed to a comfortable warmth by noon. By then, we had all peeled off our first layers of clothes and were enjoying the comfortable temperature. We stopped working when Allie drove up to our field with the other girls on the flatbed truck, but none of the girls got off and seemed to be waiting for us. I noticed they had all changed their pants, or cutoffs and shorts, and were wearing their sun hats. They had finished the smaller field and came to join us for the remainder of the day. The large field was many acres long and seemed too large for us to finish in one day. However, when the other girls arrived for lunch, they seemed to be in remarkably good spirits. I wasn't aware that there was a pond on the other side of the large field I was working in. Girls had worked several summers in these same fields and expected to eat lunch at the pond. Anne, Andrea, Marjorie, and Monique were separated from John and I most of the morning. We had moved ahead of them quickly as we worked the field, and John and I weren't trying to prove anything by working faster. We just seemed to be moving faster than the others. And John was taking out his frustration on the weeds, and I was still writing a poem in my head and thinking about other things, before either of us realized that we were 50 yards or more ahead of the girls. When we stopped for lunch, and Allie saw our progress, she remarked how fast we were, and said she felt confident she could get the large field finished by the end of the day. As John and I walked over to the trunk, to the truck, Gil said, "Gee, guys, it's great to have you working with us. We girls don't have to work so hard." Everyone seemed to be in agreement with her comment as Jennifer said, "Thanks, guys. Now we have more time to swim." John and I looked at each other with surprise, as neither of us knew what they were talking about. We didn't know that they were going to have a lunch near a pond. And they told us to get on the truck, and we would, Allie then told us to get on the truck, and she would drive everyone to the pond. Once we got to the pond, everyone got off the truck. Gail, Louise, Jennifer, and Susan ran toward the water. As the other girls walked to the pond, several girls had blankets and towels and laid them on the grass near the pond. As Jennifer and Susan began to wade in the water, it quickly covered their waists. Gail and Louise waded in more carefully as Jennifer shouted, "It's not too deep and the water is warm." Anne, Andrea, Monique, and Marjorie changed into shorts behind the truck and went into the water. I had no intention to get wet, nor did John. We both sat on the grass and just watched what was happening. Within minutes, all 9 of the girls were in the water, and waist high or chest high, it appeared that the pond was at least chest high to most of the girls. The water was clear and spring fed. There was a pumping station on the opposite bank that pumped water from the pond for irrigation. The girls were enjoying themselves as John and I watched them in amazement. John suddenly began to get restless and said he wished he had known about the swimming. He would have worn shorts. I told him to roll up his pant legs and go on. He thought about it for a minute, decided against it. He opened his lunchbox. I continued to watch the girl swim and wade in the pond. It was shortly after 12 a.m. I noticed the faint smell of windsong perfume in the air. The sun was high in the cloudless sky as I laid back on the grass. I felt intoxicated and lightheaded, as if I were in a dream state. I recall the laughter and voices of the girls as it swept over me as a breeze with the sweet scent of perfume. I closed my eyes for a moment and let myself merge with the scents and sounds of the moment. I could feel the heat of the sun against my face. I took out my sunglasses from my shirt pocket and put them on, then closed my eyes. I began to feel lifted into the sun's rays as I drifted into an altered state. Suddenly I was startled out of my euphoria by the sprinkle of water on my face. As I opened my eyes, I saw that I was encircled by five girls standing over me, their clothes dripping wet and clinging tightly to their bodies. Monique and Marjorie, Anne and Andrea had come out of the water and were drying themselves off and had placed a blanket next to me. Gail was laughing as she sprinkled more water on my face. As I wiped the water off my forehead, Gail said, "Wake up, Leo." I realized that I had fallen asleep and the girls had been sitting next to me for some time. As I sat up, I noticed several girls had taken off their wet bras and were wearing T-shirts or blouses. All the girls were barefoot and in wet shorts, sitting on their towels and blankets. I looked around to see if John was nearby. He had been sitting next to me before I drifted off. I asked Anne where her brother was, and she replied that he had left before they came out of the water and went into the woods. He'd been gone for quite a while. And Allie announced that lunch was almost over, and they had to head back to the field soon. No one seemed to know where John went to. I took off my sunglasses and bandana and wiped the water off my face and looked for my lunch bag. I wolfed down my sandwich and washed it down with water from my canteen as the girls casually began to get up from the grass and fold their towels and blankets. Allie shouted loudly toward the woods, calling for John. Then she asked me if I would go into the woods to look for him. I got up from the grass and walked over to the wooded area where Anne said he had gone. I followed a rough path about 50 feet into the thicket of pine and fir trees and saw John's lunchbox next to the base of a big trunk pine tree. I called out his name and heard something rustling in the tree overhead. Suddenly I heard a thump behind me and quickly turned around. John had jumped down behind me from a tree limb. I asked him what he had been doing up there in the tree. He said he was watching the girls from on top. I looked to see how far he had climbed and saw the perfect natural ladder of limbs that went on up almost 30 feet to the top of the pine tree. I asked him if he had climbed all the way to the top. He said almost, but that he could see all the girls in the pond and watched as they came out. He laughed at me and said he couldn't understand how I could have slept through everything. Then he asked me if I had faked sleeping when the girls came out of the water. I told him that I really had fallen asleep. He laughed and began to tell me everything I had missed. After several minutes of listening to his vivid, detailed description of each girl and what happened around me as I slept, we were interrupted by Allie shouting our names and saying that she was about to leave. John picked up his lunchbox and we walked out of the woods together. As we walked over to the truck, Allie asked me where I had found him. And asked John where he had went to. John didn't reply, and I said he was climbing trees. Allie shook her head in disbelief, looked at John, and said, "Well, at least you were staying out of trouble." John didn't respond and looked downward until Allie walked away. Then he quickly looked up at me with a 10-inch wide grin and winked. I was still amazed at how I could have stayed unconscious while 9 half-naked girls were talking all around me. I could only remember the intensity of the euphoria I experienced as I drifted off into unconsciousness that afternoon. I was consoled by the idea that it was the most pleasant experience I had ever had. To this day, I remember the intensity of that euphoric peace. everyone got back on a truck to be driven back to the field to begin work. Anne asked John what he had been doing in the trees, and John paused before he answered and looked at me for help. I ignored the question as though I had heard it. He realized it was going to say anything. I wasn't going to say anything, and told her that he had climbed a tall tree and decided to see how far up he could go. Anne looked at him suspiciously and told him he could have fallen and hurt himself, and that it was a stupid thing to do. And John didn't respond and hoped the interrogation would end there. Then Anne looked at me and asked where I had found him. I told her he jumped off the tree behind me and surprised me. When I went into the woods to find him, she laughed and said I was lucky he didn't jump or fall on me. She seemed to trust our answers, and no one else questioned us. Then Jennifer and Susan began to sing, "Do-wah-diddy-diddy-dum-diddy-doo," as Gail and Louise started to sing the lyrics. There she was, just walking down the street, singing, "Do-wah-diddy-diddy-dum-diddy-doo, I'm hers, she's mine, wedding bells are gonna chime." And all the girls finished the line singing, "Ooh." Relieved the dread of going back to work for the rest of the afternoon. We wound up singing the rest of the song. By the time we got back to work, and shouted out one of their cheerleading cheers, ending with "Go Girls Varsity." As we started work after lunch, John was no longer himself. He couldn't stay still in one spot for more than a minute, as Monique and Andrea worked near him. They were beautiful girls. John told me he nearly fell off the tree when he watched Monique and Andrea come out of the water and took off their bras. All the girls were extremely relaxed that afternoon as I worked amidst all of them. We spoke casually together and laughed as several of the girls teased me about sleeping through lunch. I thought of the way John had described what happened while I was asleep. One more event occurred that afternoon before we had finished working the field. Jennifer and Susan suddenly dropped their hose and began to brush off their legs and ankles. Jennifer took off her sneakers and started to curse out loud as Susan also took off her sneakers and began to shake them and brush off her legs. Everyone stopped working and wondered what was happening to them. Jennifer shouted, "Ants! Goddamned ants!" They all broke up. They had broken up a large nest of red ants in one of the rows, and the ants began to crawl on them. The ants were angry and aggressive, and Jennifer began to jump around hysterically until she quickly took off her shorts and began to wipe the ants off her legs. The ants had crawled up her thighs and into her shorts. And Susan had bent over to brush ants off her legs and felt the ants crawl under her shirt. She took off her blouse and began to shake it and try to brush off the ants. Then both girls ran toward the truck that was parked on the side of the field. Gail and Louise began to laugh as Jennifer and Susan were running. Anne and Andrea became concerned and went over to try and help Jennifer and Susan. John and I just stood still, not sure what to do, but Allie quickly ordered us to get back to work. Then she went over to help Jennifer and Susan. We could see Jennifer and Susan still brushing off their legs and arms near the truck. They had taken off their underwear and to shake them free of ants, and the truck was several hundred feet away from where John and I were standing. But the girls quickly closed their circle around Susan and Jennifer to shield them from our view. After several minutes, the girls dispersed, and Allie led them back into the field. As they came back, Susan was wearing only her bra and shorts, and Jennifer was wearing a towel around her hips. She had pulled off the button on her pants, and when she took them off and ran the zipper as well. All the girls were laughing when they came back into the field. Gail and Louise started to tease Jennifer and Susan by mimicking their panic and wiggling their hips. John was standing several yards away from me as the girls approached us. We were both stunned after witnessing both girls pulling off their clothes and laughed as the girls came near us. Anne saw John laughing and told them to stop. Jennifer and Susan looked at me and both said, "It was not funny, Leo." tearing off their clothes wouldn't leave my mind, and I couldn't help myself from laughing. Gail said she was sorry she woke me up. Then Allie broke the growing tension and told everyone to get back to work. But John was still laughing and looked at me to see if I was. I turned away from him as I held back my laughter and walked into the field to start working. I knew if I encouraged him or said anything, I would catch the wrath of the Furies. I felt badly for leaving him on his own, but I knew that what was about to happen if he continued. And John made the big mistake of telling Jennifer how funny she looked when she took off her shorts and how silly Susan looked when she took off her shirt to wipe off the ants. I had already put 50 feet of distance between myself and John and began to walk further away. I knew the temperament of both Jennifer and Susan and all the other girls and wanted nothing to do with what I knew was about to happen. Jennifer led the attack with the first war cry. "You little jerk. How would you like to have red ants crawling up your ass?" She then looked at Anne and said, "Your brother is a real jerk. How the hell do you stand him? Those ants were biting us and crawling all over us, and that jerk just stood there laughing at us." Then Susan began her attack. "I've got ant bites all over my back, and you're just standing there like an idiot, grinning like a damn goof. I'm never going to work with you again. Allie, you should fire him. He's just an idiot." Then Gail called him a goofy kid, and Louise said, "Grow up, little boy." And I was standing far enough away from the Furies to be well out of the range of their verbal daggers when they turned their attention towards me. I was too obvious by keeping my distance when Jennifer shouted at me and said, "Leo, you better not have been laughing at us." I didn't reply. I hoped they would ignore me. Then John told them that I was laughing just as hard as he was. Once he threw me to the Furies, I had no more sympathy for John. I dropped my hoe on the ground and began to walk back into the firestorm, knowing exactly what to say in my defense. As I approached the group, I looked at John and to let him know it was every man for himself. And every eye was on me as I came near the group. I made certain my expression was serious and my sunglasses were on straight. As I entered, Jennifer stood next to her. Susan was wearing only her bra, and I could see what Monique was looking downward as Marjorie stood next to her. Anne and Andrea were silent and watched me as I came into the circle. Allie was standing outside the circle, observing all from a short distance. Gail began to giggle as Louise nudged her to get her to stop. Jennifer looked at her very sternly and said, "Were you laughing at us when we were being bitten by ants?" Well, Jennifer knew I liked her. We had known each other for many years. They had many laughs together over many things she had said or done. But she was very serious when she asked me if I had laughed at her, as were all the girls. I could feel their stares burning holes in my head. I knew I had to be honest with them. They all had seen me laughing at Jennifer and Susan as they fought off the ants. But once John condemned me to try and save himself, I couldn't deny my crime of insensitivity. I took off my sunglasses and looked into Jennifer's eyes and said, "Yes, I did laugh. I apologize to you and to Susan for laughing. I'm sorry if I embarrassed both of you." Then I looked at Susan as she stood stoically next to Jennifer, with her arms still folded over her chest. I asked her if she was all right. She said she was. I asked her to accept my apology and I was sorry for laughing. She knew me well enough to know I was sincere. Then I told her if she put some saliva on the bites, it would relieve the itching. Susan smiled at me as she put her index finger on her tongue and then rubbed her finger on the ant bites of her stomach. Susan looked at Jennifer to see if I could be acquitted. Jennifer nodded yes to her and said, "Okay, Leo, we accept your apology." The other girls remained silent. And Allie asked Susan and Jennifer if they wanted to go to the farmhouse to put something on their ant bites and told John she wanted to talk to him. She said to John in front of everyone to meet her at the truck. She wanted her father to talk to him, and for John to go back to the farmhouse with her. Susan and Jennifer, she wanted them to go back to the farmhouse with Susan and Jennifer and her. John's face became pale as he turned around and began to walk toward the truck. Anne remained silent and looked at him sternly as he left. Andrea put her hand on Anne's shoulder and told her not to worry about him. I looked at Anne and said, maybe Allie's father will let him work at the farm. Anne smiled at me and said, maybe. We all knew it was John's last day working with us. I was grateful I still had a job. And I had no idea what to expect in the coming days. I had the job at least for less than 2 days. My only hope was that I could get at least a full week's paycheck and stay on friendly terms with everyone until the end of the week. My chances of surviving the job for the next 2 weeks seemed to be a real long shot, since I barely survived that afternoon. My hope for working another day was revived when John, Allie, Susan, and Jennifer left for the farmhouse, and everyone began working again. Marjorie, Monique, Anne, and Andrea decided to work next to me as Gail and Louise came over to join us. Marjorie broke the silence by saying, Leo, it was nice of you to apologize to them. I had my sunglasses on when I turned around to look at her. I didn't know how to respond to her. I thought of a careful reply. Then I thanked her and said, I hope Jennifer and Susan had accepted my apology. Then Monique said, I'm sure they did. I was surprised she said that, because I was grateful Monique knew my apology was sincere, and Marjorie believed me. I wasn't certain why I felt uneasy by their statements. I began to realize I might have discovered a vital clue to understanding the feminine mind. That discovery kept me unemployed for the next 2 weeks that summer. I had identified an essential self-preserving feminine defense system. It becomes activated when one member of a group of female friends is emotionally affected by an outside influence. It became apparent to me that whatever influence affects any individual in that group, either positively or negatively, affects all of the group's members in the same way. The result is an immediate collective response to that influence, created by the intuitive synchronicity of the group's members to enhance the desired outcome. I know I extended the show way over what I normally do, but I thought I might, maybe I should end it here and continue next Thursday. I think I'm on a roll here. Maybe I'll just finish the fourth part and read the fifth part next week. On the afternoon of the second day, John was no longer a part of the crew. The overall dislike of the girls toward him served as a warning to me. My apology seemed to work, and I was allowed to continue my employment on the farm. As we ended the day and drove back to town, I remember how quiet the girls were. Susan and Jennifer were plastered with first aid cream on their legs and arms to stop the ant bites from itching. Anne and Andrea were sitting next to each other. When I asked Anne why she was so quiet, she answered, I don't know what to say to my parents about John. John had been fired and was driven home earlier that afternoon by one of the farm crew. He wasn't offered another job. Ellie told her father she didn't want him on her crew because all the girls were angry at him. She said he was too immature. Her father took her advice and fired John. As we arrived at the parking lot, we all said goodbye and went our own ways. I walked home for the parking lot that afternoon with a sense of urgency. The song I had been thinking of all day had finally come to an end, and I was anxious to play it on my guitar and sing the words. So often the songs would sound great in my head and on paper until I actually started to play it on an instrument. I thought my entire arrangement was off or needed a lot of work. I remember taking off my boots on the porch and going upstairs to my bedroom to get my guitar. Before washing, I picked up my guitar and began to work out the chords and the lyrics. Within a few minutes, I had played out the entire song and liked it. It was a hit. It was never recorded, and I never offered a record deal, but in my 16-year-old mind, I felt it was worthy to be included in my future album of greatest hits. The next morning, I woke up late. I was running a little late to meet Allie and the girls. When I arrived in the parking lot, all the girls were on the back of the flatbed yelling at me to hurry up. I was on time, but according to them, I was very late. All the girls were there. I thought Susan and Jennifer might have taken the day off to recuperate from their aunt attack, but they were the first two who shouted to me to hurry up. Allie was sitting in the driver's seat and gave me a look of concern as I walked over to the truck. As I jumped into the back of the truck, Susan was standing near the tailgate and offered me her hand to help me stand up. I thanked her and held on the rail to get my balance. She gave me a big smile when I asked her how she felt. She said she was fine and the bites all went down. Jennifer gave me a big grin and laughed as she said what a relief it was when her bites on her butt stopped itching. The other girls began to laugh as Allie started up the truck and we drove off to the parking lot. As I leaned up against the cab, I noticed that all the girls were sitting in the back of the truck near me. Though I wasn't a student in body language, they all appeared to me to be saying something. They were all happy and talking to each other. Anne was sitting closest to me and remained quiet. I asked her what happened with John, and she said that her father got mad at him and were disappointed that he couldn't behave himself. And then she smiled and said she was really glad he didn't have to worry about him going anywhere. I wouldn't worry about him anymore. I nodded in agreement. Anne was a beautiful girl with shoulder length, highlighted blonde hair. Her skin was tan, and she was wearing a pair of cutoffs and a red short sleeve blouse. She had her hair tied back with a red ribbon. She was wearing white crew socks with her work sneakers. She looked stunning that morning, and she seemed more like herself, more like the girl I had asked 1,000 times to go out on a date with. And as I stood leaning against the truck cab, she was sitting next to me, leaning her back against the cab a foot away from my leg. Andrea was next to her. Andrea always seemed to be in her own world, and it must have been a happy world, because seldom did she ever frown. She sat quietly next to Anne, leaning against the cab and looking at the road between the side rails. Gail and Louise were slightly distant that morning. Louise chatted with Monique and Marjorie as Gail remained quiet. I caught Gail staring at me a few times as I looked at her. She quickly looked downward or at the road. I didn't say anything to her. Susan and Jennifer were talking to each other about something and appeared content. The girls all had their sun hats with them, but none were wearing them. As we drove along Route 1, it was windy that morning, but still warm. The entire week was warm and sunny and hot in the afternoon. It was the third day of work and we were headed for another field. This field had to have the rock sticked first and then be weeded. And as we drove along the dirt road to the field, Monique became agitated and said something to Louise. I didn't find out until later what it was, but Monique seldom lost her temper and always seemed to be serene. As the truck stopped and Allie got out of the cab, she told us that she wanted everyone to pick rocks during the morning, and she would weed the fields in the afternoon. It was a large field, and several of the girls groaned as they looked at the size of it. Allie assigned two teams of workers. Two teams would work on the side rows of the field and throw rocks off to the side of the field. And then both teams would join in the middle of the field to finish the middle rows. It appeared to be a good idea until we got into the field and realized how wide the field was. I suggested to Allie that one team pick rocks while another team weeds behind them. She thought about it for a moment and said she would do it after we picked the rocks out of the side rows first. She then assigned the teams. Monique and Marjorie, Anne and Andrea were to work together. Gail, Louise, Susan, and Jennifer were to work on the other side of the field. Then she asked all of them who wanted to work with me. To my surprise, all of them said they wanted me on their team. Well, Susan and Jennifer were most vocal, but Marjorie and Monique asked Allie. Allie and Andrea spoke out as well. I was surprised at Andrea's enthusiasm to work with me because she seldom voiced her opinions of me. I saw Anne slightly nudge her before she spoke. Allie seemed surprised at their reaction and said, "Okay, Leo, you work with Andrea, Anne, Marjorie, and Monique." She then assigned us to the right side of the field and told the other girls to start on the left side, and she wanted to clean the field before lunch. I was happy with my team choice. I was even happier that all the girls wanted me on their teams. Jennifer and Susan both shouted out their complaint and said they needed me more than the other girls did because there were more rocks on their side of the field. Gail and Louise voiced their disappointment also and told Allie it wasn't fair and that I should work with both of them. Well, Allie laughed at them and said if my team finished before their team, she would send me to help them, and the rest of my team could begin work in the middle of the field. Gail and Louise agreed to the compromises, did Jennifer and Susan. As we divided up into our teams, all the girls put their gloves and hats and walked over to their side of the field. I followed Monique and Marjorie as Anne and Andrea walked behind me. I stopped for a moment to let them catch up to me and thanked Andrea for telling Allie she wanted to work with me. She wanted me to work with her. Andrea blushed and looked at me with her deep brown eyes and said Anne had told her to say something. I looked at Anne and she smiled at me and said she didn't want the other girls to have it too easy. I laughed and did not reply. I was quite flattered and reasonably smart enough to accept the compliment and keep my mouth shut. As we began to work, I didn't realize how distracted I was becoming until I tripped over one of the rolls and fell on my knees. As I was throwing a large rock off into the side of the field, I noticed every one of the girls were bent over. They were all wearing cutoffs or shorts. The sight was distracting enough that I misstepped and tripped on one of the rows. I lost my balance and fell on my knees. Thankfully, I fell on soft dirt and didn't get hurt. However, my accident was noticed by everyone on the team. Arthur and Monique were closest to me when I fell, and they came over to see if I was all right. I quickly got up and brushed myself off, slightly embarrassed, and told them I was okay. I remember the looks of concern from both of them. Then Anne and Andrea came near and asked what had happened. I told them I had tripped on a row and fell, but I was all right. Then Anne asked me why I was so clumsy. And I told her I got distracted by something and tripped. She looked at me curiously, then turned around and went back to work. Monique and Marjorie asked me if I was all right again, and I told them I was fine. My knees were a little sore, but my pride hurt much more. I knew I had to be more careful around the girls. If I got any more distracted than I was, I would really hurt myself. The rest of the morning, I tried not to get caught up with what was directly in front of me. I found myself working very hard to stay ahead of the girls to maintain a frontal view of them. I couldn't keep my pace for too long trying to outpace them, so I compromised with myself and worked in their pace, which was hard enough. They were all hard workers. It was inspiring to watch them. None of them complained about the work. They all seemed to have something to say to each other to pass the time. I was able to stay on my feet the remainder of the morning. I found the side and frontal views of the girls far less distracting than the rear view I had earlier. As we entered the ends of the side rows, Allie walked over to us over the other side of the field. When she saw how far we had gone, she asked me to go and help the other team. And once everyone had finished the side rows, they would start in the middle rows, and she would begin the truck around. She would bring the truck around. It was mid-morning, and Anne asked Allie if we could take our break. Allie said we could take 10 minutes, and she wanted me to go and help the other team. I asked if I could have a break before I went, and she agreed. I later regretted my decision to take my break at that side of the field. As we stopped for the break, all the girls quickly went over to tall grass. No one had announced their need to relieve themselves, nor so I was aware of what they were doing until I heard Ann's voice asking someone if someone had any more Kleenex. I was far enough away from them to assure their privacy. However, after I realized why everyone went into the grass, I made sure I was nowhere near them when they came out. I was sitting near the high grass when I heard Ann and walked toward the end of the field, far enough away so that no one would be embarrassed or suspicious that they came out of the grass. Shortly after I got to the edge of the field, all the girls emerged from the high grass together. They saw me standing far enough away that no one said anything. I waited until they all sat down, then walked over to them. As I approached, Ann looked up at me and asked, "Where did you go?" I looked at her carefully and replied that I had gone to see how much more work was left. Marjorie asked me if I wanted to part of her orange, and Monique was lying on her back and had closed her eyes for a few moments. As she lay near Marjorie, I stared at her. Hold on one second. Yes, we're back. I wanted to, there was a call from a publicist of mine in California, and I'll have to finish this program pretty shortly here, but I really wanted to get through to finish this. As we stopped for a break, all the girls quickly went over to the side of the field and disappeared in the tall grass. No one had announced their need to relieve, I had already read that. I looked at her carefully and replied that I had gone to see how many more works was left. Then Marjorie asked if I wanted to sit down, and Ann and Andrea moved over to welcome me. I realized that I had passed another test of male sensitivity by respecting their privacy. As I sat down and began to eat my half orange, Ann asked me if I preferred to work with them instead of the other girls. I bit on one of the sliced oranges so I wouldn't have to respond to her questions immediately. As I thought of what to say for a moment, I noticed the other girls looking at me, and Monique had opened her eyes to see the state my mind responds. I wasn't sure who to direct my reply to and remained silent for a few more seconds until Marjorie said, "Well, Leo, Who do you prefer to work with? I looked at her and said, "I really enjoyed working with them, but I like the other girls too." Then Andrea asked me, "Who do you like best of all of us?" Andrea may have been in her own world much of the time, but she was much more involved in this inquisition than I expected her to be. I sheepishly grinned and looked at all of them. Then the words came out of me spontaneously as though someone else was saying them. "I'm crazy about all of you." I looked at each of them when I said it and then waited for their response. Monique was first to say, "That's really nice, Leo, and smart." Then Ann said, You've asked me out at least 100 times. I was surprised she had kept count and said, "Yes, but you rejected me every time." Then Andrea said, "You've never asked me out. How come?" I looked at her and said, "Because I never thought you would go out with me, and I don't know you as well as I know Ann and Monique. But if you would accept a date with me, I'd be happy to go to ask you out." And Marjorie said, "You never asked me out either. You've always asked Monique and Ann." I looked at Marjorie and said, "I didn't think you would want to go out on a date with me. I heard that you didn't date many guys." She took off her glasses and squinted at me, then said, That's only because I don't get asked very much." I looked at her and said seriously, "I've heard from several guys that you wouldn't go out with them." She looked at me confused and said, "Who told you that?" Then Monique added, "Yes, Leo, who told you that?" And I thought about several who had been turned down that I had heard about, but realized I had never heard it firsthand. I said, "Jeff Jenneres and Bruce Martin, I heard, had asked you out, and you told them and you turned them down. Marjorie squinted again and said, those guys were jerks. I didn't like either of them. And when I turned them down, they told everyone that I didn't date. And that wasn't true. Now, no one asks me out. I looked at her in amazement. I had always thought differently about her. She had just graduated high school with Monique and Anne and Andrea. They were all 18 and four of the prettiest and most popular girls in school. I was amazed to learn how few dates all of them actually had. I must have looked stunned when Anne asked me who I liked best out of the girls, because Andrea followed up the question and said, I'll bet you like Anne best. I looked at Anne and said, I did like her very much, but then I looked at Monique and said I was crazy about Monique, as well as I really like Marjorie. And last I looked at Andrea and told her I liked her very much too. And Anne said, if that's true, why have you asked me out 100 times? I told her I really liked her, that she was one of the nicest girls I knew. She always encouraged my advances, but I never accepted a date with me. She never accepted a date with me because I was 2 years younger than she was. But she was always very nice to me. Anne blushed at my answer, and Monique said she didn't know I had asked Anne out so many times, and said I had asked her out at least as many times. Then Anne said, How many times did he give you? And Monique began to laugh and said, hundreds. Then Anne said, did he ever use the one about the green horse? Monique laughed and said, yes, but the one I liked best was when he told me my eyes were sparkled like diamonds when I laughed. Then Anne said, did he tell you that your lips were supple? And Monique replied, yes, he used that one once, but his best one was when he told me my hair was like fine silk, my eyes were like sparkled diamonds, and my lips were as supple as a rose petals. Anne looked at Monique inquisitively and said, did he ever kiss you? Monique looked at me quickly and responding by saying, yes. Anne then said, when? Monique replied, the night I invited him to my party. Anne said, what party was that? Monique replied, the party you couldn't come to last fall because you were grounded for something. Oh, that party. You kissed him at that party? Monique replied, yes. Then Anne asked, did you do anything else with him? Anne turned to look at me as I began to stand up. I had been listening to them talk about me for 5 minutes without them looking at me. The conversation was getting a little tense. As I stood up, Andrea told me to sit down. I was surprised at her insistence until she said, Leo, did you do anything more with Monique? I looked at Monique for help, but she just smiled at me and said it was all right for me to tell them what we did. To be honest, it was a great night, I said. I was crazy about Monique. And yes, we only kissed that night. Anne and Andrea didn't believe me, and Monique had never told Marjorie about it either. They all turned to Monique and asked her why she never told them. And I broke into the conversation and said it was no one else's business if we kissed each other. Then Anne said, did you make out? And I looked at Anne and said, no, we just kissed each other goodnight. Then Andrea said, yeah, right. As I began to stand up, Andrea watched me until she got my attention. As I looked at her, she changed her expression into a sultry flirt and said, Leo, would you go out with me? I didn't know if she was serious or not. She then stood up and came towards me and unbuttoned the two top buttons of her blouse while saying, Leo, would you go out with me? At that moment, she looked sexier than at least 10 Playboy Playmate centerfolds. I hadn't noticed the other girls holding back the laughter, and Andrea continued her flirting and began to bat her eyes and purse her lips. I was being seduced in front of all of them by a girl I least expected to do it. I said, yes, yes, I would go out with her. Then she sat down next to Anne and stared at me from head to foot and said, nah, I don't think so. Anne and Marjorie began to laugh, and Monique put her hand over her face so I wouldn't see her laughing. My 16-year-old ego had been mercilessly crushed by these girls. I stood before them embarrassed, exposed, and feeling completely stupid. I realized that Andrea did to me was what I had done to her. Suddenly, Allie drove up in a flatbed and shouted towards me, telling me to go over to the other side of the field help the other girls. She shouted to the girls. That breakdown was over. As I started out across the field, the girls all said bye, Leo. I didn't bother waving or turning around. Quickly walked away from them. I didn't want to be mind-fucked anymore. As I crossed the large field and approached the other girls, Jennifer called out to me and said, "Hurry up, Leo." I laughed at the refreshing welcome as I approached the girls. Gail and Louise suddenly went into the bush, a brush near the edge of the field. They had taken their break earlier than I had, and Allie was working with them. I'm not sure why they waited for me before they went to relieve themselves, but by then I had already been through it with the other girls, and figured it was a girl thing. I really didn't want to know about it, and all I knew was that guys went solo, but it seemed that girls preferred to go in pairs. When Gail and Louise returned, that they began to work again. Jennifer and Susan were oddly quiet as Gail asked me if I had taken a break yet and if the other girls had taken a long break. I told her our break had just finished and lasted about 15 minutes. She threw down a rock and said, "That's not fair. We only had 10 minutes. They had you working with them, and I'll bet you nearly finished. We had to work with Allie, and she's a slave driver." Then Louise said she didn't want to pick rocks anymore. She hates to pick rocks. She preferred to weed the field. Gail said her back was breaking from all the bending over. I realized I was being set up, but they were so obvious about it, they made me laugh. And Jennifer told them to stop complaining, and Susan called them babies. And I started to pick rocks and throw them into the grass by the side of the field. Susan and Jennifer were a few rows away from me when Susan asked me if I liked working with them better than the other girls. I was recovering from a seriously wounded ego and said I preferred to work with her, Jennifer, Gail, and Louise. Susan was surprised at my statement and said, "I thought you really liked Anna Monique." I replied that I liked her and Jennifer very much as well. Then Jennifer said, "I can't believe you like to work with us as much as with them." I asked her why she thought I liked them less. She replied, "Because they're prettier than we are, and you asked Monique and Anne out many times." I told her that I thought she was very pretty, and so was Susan, and that Gail and Louise were very pretty as well. And Gail said, "You're lying, Leo. Monique and Anne are both prettier than we are." I didn't know how to respond to that and remained silent as I picked up a rock and threw it to the side of the field. And Susan said, "Leo likes a lot of girls." Gail laughed and said, "Yeah, Leo likes too many girls." And Jennifer said, "How come you never asked any of us for a date, Leo?" I didn't know how to respond to her question and paused for a moment to think of a response. I didn't realize that all of the girls were upset that I hadn't asked them out. I looked at Susan, who had introduced me to her friend that summer before, and said, "I thought you all thought I was too young for you, and it wouldn't go out with me. You were all the most popular girls in school." And Louise said, "You are younger than we are, but you're not like the rest of the guys your age," Jennifer added. "Yeah, you're a good dancer, and you don't grab us. And other guys in school are just always trying to cop a feel." I was surprised at Jennifer's statement, since I had danced many times, slow dancing with her, and I'd always pushed the boundaries as far as she would let me. And Susan said, "He gets a little grabby once in a while." I began to laugh and said, "I only went as far as they let me. And Gail said, "He likes to dance close and sometimes too close." And Louise added, "Have you ever seen him dancing with Ruth or Mona? They almost let him go all the way. He's dated more of them, too. Both of them, too." The conversation began to sound like the one I had earlier with the other girls. I was getting ready for another assault on my ego when Susan said, "Leo asked me out several times, but he was only a freshman last year, and most of us thought he was too young to date." I looked at her seriously and said, "Would you go out with me now?" She smiled and said, "Yes." And Jennifer said she would too, and Gail and Louise said they would like to go out with me together sometime. Well, I was stunned by other offers and started to think about how much it would cost to date all of them during the summer, and decided it would take almost everything I could earn in the next few weeks, but it would be worth it. As they all were looking at me, I asked them all if they would go out with me. They all looked at me as if I hadn't spoken. And Jennifer said, "Yes, I would." Susan said she would too. And Gail asked me to go out with them on Saturday night. And Susan said, "Why don't we all go with you to the public dance?" I didn't hesitate a second and accepted her offer, as the other girls all agreed and said it would be fun. We all started to work again as the girls started to talk. The girls talked about Saturday night. As I was working, I only got 10 minutes here, guys, to record, and I don't know if I'll be able to finish this. It's quite long. So I think I'll finish here and then end this story next week. In the meantime, if you're interested, please go to my website, thelastillshow.org, and check out the article, Summer That Was. And I hope you enjoy it. I'm gonna let you go now, because it's really getting a little late, and I have to make another call. So good night, everybody. Thanks for listening, and please join me next Thursday. Well, actually, join me Tuesday, Wednesday, when we do regular programming on Thursday night. I'll continue this.